Welcome to our Global Scot podcast series, Past, Present and Future Proofing. Like all of those who are invited to join the network, those we will hear from in this series are recognised experts in their field. So please sit back and enjoy this episode.
I'm Evelyn Simpson. I've been a Global Scot for, my goodness, I think nearly 3 years now. I work for myself as a coach and consultant, working in particular with early stage companies on access to finance. But I also do quite a bit of work through a company called Skillfluence, where I deliver accelerator programs and communication programs and coaching. And I am chair of a fabulous third sector organisation called Venture Scotland. My journey has been really unconventional. I started out working in investment banking and had the absolute privilege of working all over the world. So I moved to New York when I was about 22 with my wee suitcases and ended up working for JP Morgan Chase and its predecessors, working primarily in corporate finance with ocean-going shipping companies, which was amazing fun. While I was there, I went to Columbia Business School and got my MBA and met my husband, and the two of us embarked on a tour of the world. So we ended up living in six different countries in Europe, in Asia, and we also spent another stint in the US. I gave up investment banking when it just became too complicated to keep two alpha careers going. And therein started my really unconventional journey where I've done all kinds of stuff. In the voluntary sector, I've run a number of voluntary organizations, mostly because I couldn't work and I'm not good at being bored. I trained as a yoga teacher, and then I started my own coaching and training company with a business partner. A really good mindset to have is it's not wrong, it's different. And that's something that I've taken with me and has been really, really valuable in working in different countries, in different cultures, because it is amazing how even in the same company, it almost feels like you don't work for the same company because people have such different mindsets. I think it's a real challenge and a real talent to be able to bring elements of a corporate culture into an international culture and bring the best parts of it, but merge it with the best parts of that country culture. Working at JP Morgan Chase in Hong Kong, I had to manage a group of people who were in multiple countries throughout Asia and who all had different ideas about what the company was really all about, and also manage it with a management culture that was very New York, US centric, who thought that this is the way we do it in New York and America is the best country in the world, so that's the way we're going to do it everywhere. So it's a really difficult balance to get what we needed from the different cultures throughout the region, but still allow them to be themselves and to keep their culture and keep them happy. A lot of people I saw almost rode roughshod over the culture. Others took it in completely the opposite direction and embraced the local culture so completely that they almost forgot who they worked for. But I think in any culture, you have to listen and try to understand what's important to people and how they like to work so that they retain a sense of identity and autonomy. when I moved back to Scotland in 2014, I continued with that work, but eventually sold to my business partner for a number of reasons, including a very sick father, and somehow landed at an Investing Women conference where I started to immerse myself in the early stage sector and realized that with my combination of finance and coaching skills, I could really add value. The finance sector, in a lot of ways, has remained stubbornly unchanged. It's still super male-centric. It's built around crazy hours. It's really kind of testosterone-driven. I work in a completely different part of finance now than I did way back when I started out. That element of it being really male-dominated impacts women who work in finance. It impacts how finance works, and it really impacts women's businesses and their ability to achieve their ambition. And that's really depressing, actually. Women seeking investment for early stage companies are really up against it. It's a highly competitive market anyway, but overall, women receive only 2% of equity funding in the early stage high growth market. And they're also disadvantaged when they seek grant funding and they seek debt funding as well when their businesses get to a stage. But it really is a stark statistic at the very early stage in equity funding. It's getting slightly better for the first couple of rounds for female founded companies, but overall it's remained stubbornly static. And that's in an environment where the amount of money that companies are getting has grown massively. So they are getting more money, but they're still only getting this tiny, tiny sliver. There hasn't been enough work done to understand why that is. You know, we can look at unconscious bias. We can look at the fact that in venture capital firms, only something like 15% of limited partners are female. But the reality is that if that kind of an inequality existed anywhere else, we would be raging about it. It's starting to get much more attention, and the Stewart Review, which is just published, hopefully is going to bring even more attention to it. The Rose Review has elevated the level of attention that this statistic has been getting, but it still hasn't changed yet. So we've got lots of work to do. Transformational change would be moving the needle on that stubborn 2% statistic. It's a tiny number. We've got such a long way to go. But somehow, if we could even just start moving the needle, it would make a difference because the sums of money are significant. If we saw it double, we'd be at 4%. Would that be a transformation? I guess it would be a start. And I think that we only do that if we start looking at transparency and accountability. The Rose Review builds in accountability for people who sign up to the Investing in Women code, but it's a voluntary code. We don't always collect data from everybody who's out there. You know, there are companies like Beauhurst who are collecting lots of data, who are following the stats for female-founded companies getting investment. But there's an element of we've got the numbers, but what do we do about it? How do we make the change? And the impetus for making the change is so compelling. When you look at the work that has been done around female-founded companies and you look at their performance, you know, perhaps because they have to, female-founded companies are able to accomplish more with the capital that they receive. They typically generate higher ROIs, and that's been really clearly demonstrated in the research. So the economic case for investing in female-founded companies and mixed teams, by the way, is absolutely compelling, but yet it just isn't joining up. We're not doing that, and it's a loss to us as individuals in the economy, because all of that female ingenuity and ambition is being lost. And it's a loss to us in the economy generally, because when we look at the stats, I think Women's Enterprise Scotland have done some work to demonstrate that if female entrepreneurship occurred at the same level as male entrepreneurship, the economy in Scotland would be worth an extra £8 billion. That's massive, and we really need it just now. Female-founded businesses, in a lot of ways, are no different from male-founded businesses. They cover a whole variety of sectors. Tech businesses, businesses that are working towards the transition to net zero. Lots of people look at female-owned businesses and they think about fashion businesses or product-based businesses or things that would be kind of typically female. And the sad thing about a lot of those businesses is that the women who start them have massive ambition. They want to grow their businesses, they want to scale their businesses. But sometimes, because they are female-led, they seem to be put in a box that we call lifestyle businesses. There are plenty of businesses that might fall into that category, which are massive scaled businesses. And I've spoken with so many female founders who are just up against it even more than other businesses trying to get funding because they get put in this box called lifestyle business. But female founders are, they are starting a huge array of different businesses. They are super ambitious. They want to grow and scale their businesses, and the funding market is holding them back. For me, allyship is really, really important in helping female founders to achieve their ambitions. If I think particularly from the perspective of investors, it's about being conscious of the female founders that we're talking to. I posted on my LinkedIn profile a while ago and asked female founders what they had been asked by investors that would never be asked of male founders. And women get asked about their families and how they're going to manage looking after their kids if they're going to be a funded entrepreneur. They get asked if their husband has money to invest in the company. They get asked a lot of things that, frankly, would be illegal if they got asked them in a job interview. So I would encourage investors to think about what they're asking female founders, to not make assumptions about whether a business is a lifestyle business, to think about, is this really a scalable business? What has this entrepreneur achieved already? And I would encourage investors to be really transparent about their investments in female founders. I think there are a lot of really good things going on, particularly in the angel investing community in Scotland. And there are a few groups who have started to be really transparent about how they're investing in female founders. And I would encourage everybody to focus on being that transparent. And also, highlighting the female founders that they do invest in and their achievements, because it helps for other female founders coming up behind them to see that there is a way. What motivates me is helping people to achieve their ambitions, to achieve their potential. So whether that's working with female founders on their investment readiness plan or their business strategy that is going to help them achieve their ambitions, or working through Skillfluence on accelerator programs, or with academics who are trying to collaborate with industry, or working with Venture Scotland, where we take vulnerable young people and through a series of outdoor programs help them to achieve their potential. That's kind of the thread that ties it all together for me and gets me out of bed and motivated every day. I became interested in being a global Scot really through interacting with people in the network. I lived overseas for 26 years and did not know it existed. I started up a business in Belgium, and I really wish I had known that the Global Scot network existed, because it would have been so valuable. It's very clear to me that everywhere I've worked and lived, there's a vibrant community of Scots. I mean, we kind of laughed living overseas, because it's like the Scots living overseas are more Scottish than the Scots living in Scotland, you know? And I guess that just brought home to me, we're a tiny country, but our diaspora and our influence is so vibrant and so extensive. And I kind of love the idea of bringing that kind of Scot living outside of Scotland, that global mindset and ambition to businesses in Scotland. A lot of times with younger founders, they don't necessarily have that exposure. And the world is a big place, and there is a lot of stuff going on out there that we can bring back to Scotland and really help to grow and scale our businesses. And that idea is really, really important. Those scaled businesses are where the most employment comes from when we're thinking about how we grow our economy. So bringing that global mindset, and yes, you can be a business based in Scotland and work throughout the world is really important to me. For a woman starting a business in Scotland, my best piece of advice is be ambitious. Don't let those stats hold you back. It's an amazing time to start a business, and hopefully, as I said, with the Stewart Review coming out, hopefully the Scottish Government is going to enact all of those recommendations. It's going to be an even better place to be a woman starting a business. Go with that ambition, look around you at the rest of the world and see what people are doing. We can learn so much from what people are doing in other countries.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode in our Global Scot podcast series. If you'd like to find out more about the Global Scot Network, you can visit us at www.globalscot.com.